Very good, and welcome to the Fred Report Technical Market Call for April 3rd, 2025. Okay, obviously, we're seeing some surprising action in response to the news and when I see, the tariff news. When I see action like this, which is a surprise, one of the things that I always do is I look at the market technicals in the absence of news and just say, okay, if there was news, what was the tip-off for this? One of the big tip-offs, frankly, was the put-call numbers are incredibly bad still, 0.95. We haven't had any sort of panic readings at all on the put-call, and that's something that has concerned us, although the structure of the market has been such and the structure of the indicators has been such that, you know, frankly, things still look like they're in many respects, a bottoming formation. Obviously, we have to see today's close, but the market is in support. And what I'm noticing and what I noticed in the chart book is that a lot of stocks had gotten close to overbought on the daily stochastics on this rally, but the weekly ones are still in good position. Breadth indicators are pretty good. And when I look at some of the key names, let's look at NVIDIA, for example, that's still holding support. Right now it's trading off its lows. We'll have to see how it closes. When I look at something like Palantir, that is still trading near support, actually above the Monday lows, and you know, looks pretty, you know, still within the realm of possibility of making a bottom. When I look at one that should be doing much worse, I think, Tesla's just filled a little bit of a gap and is actually trading up from that. In fact, you know, a lot of the individual stocks just don't look that terrible. So what we're going to be doing, obviously, it's normally a mistake to sell on a day like today, unless you're making new lows on something after 10:30, quarter of 11 in the morning. We'll just have to see how this goes, but we're actually still looking for some sort of a bottom in here and a rally. When I look, for example, at Ford's holding up okay. When I look at IBM, you know, across industries, things just, the individual key stocks just aren't trading that badly. So we'll have to see how this goes, but we were, you know, we're still thinking this is not as terrible as it looks. And again, the news is somewhat overshadowing. I will say this, if we get bad put call numbers the next couple of days, the market has not stopped going down. That seems to be what's doing it. You don't like to hang your hat on one indicator, but at the same time, intermediate sentiment basically was equal to bears. Bulls and bears were equal this week. Intermediate sentiment is still very positive and will probably be more so after this week. Again, emphasize 28% bulls, 28% bears, the rest expecting correction. And that was before this news came out. Those numbers came out yesterday in the morning. So we'll see what the numbers are. You know, those numbers came out on April 1st, rather. We'll see what the numbers are next week. Our guess is they're probably going to be a little bit worse. So, you know, rather than go on, I'm going to get Jeff on, and then Bob Robbins may have a comment for us as well. But Jeff probably has some questions and some remarks. So, Jeff, let's see if you've got anything for us.
Hey, Fred.
Hey, Jeff.
Let's start with treasuries. Looks like they're being bought. Is a place to go. Makes sense?
Yeah, Jeff, you know, what's actually interesting, and I didn't mention this because it was in my notes, but I figured you'd ask about it. We've hit our first target of 92.50 on these. We opened actually above that target at 92.52. And again, we still think there's going to be a drop in interest rates into the summer, and it looks like, you know, treasuries are perking up here, which we've been expecting.
So if I look at, like, portfolios, today isn't a really bad day.
No.
You know, Lockheed up 41, Philip Morris up almost 2%, Glaxo up almost 3%, Gilead up 1%. I'm just kind of going across stuff. You know, utilities are up. So there's a fair amount of stuff that's acting pretty well, given that given that we're down like 4% on the indexes. So do you think that maybe this is the ultimate low, or do you think we've got to go a bunch lower?
Well, I want to see again the put call numbers. And Jeff, there's one thing I do want to mention, and Bob Robbins is probably going to talk about this as well. We communicated a little bit this morning. You know, the S&P is down 10-11%, somewhere in there, depending on which set of numbers you use and what time you take the numbers this morning, which is a normal correction. The real issue for a lot of people is that people are overloaded in some of these tech names that are down a whole bunch. In other words, it feels worse to those people than it does to someone like me who doesn't own a lot of those names.
But can I stop you for a second?
Sure.
On that thought? So it's interesting. So in Erlanger, each week we put out a list of our favorite longs and our favorite shorts. And one thing that has happened this week is we've been totally buffered by Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You know, in other words, stocks that are down, let me just use an example. Let me just go to here. Give me 1 second, because I think this is a really important point. We look at my down list. Let's see. Okay. Gap is down 21%, 22% this morning, right? But for the week, it is only down 9%. So in other words, there's been a lot of buffering of stuff. Here's another one. TOST, which is Toast, is down. It's getting toasted today. It's down 9.5%. But for the week, it's only down 18 basis points. So we had a pretty good Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, despite the fact that we started down. We rallied each of those 3 days. So there's a little bit of a buffer that's there. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And the fact is, you know, one thing we haven't really had is a selling climax yet, and we'll see. Maybe we'll get that today or tomorrow. Some of that will have something to do with the put call numbers. But, you know, objectively, if I didn't know that the economic world order was changing completely into the detriment of everybody, I'd be looking at a lot of these stocks and thinking this is still part of a bottoming process. It is dramatic. There's no doubt about that. But we really will have to see some follow through here. And again, the short-term sentiment has been icky. It's not bullish. Intermediate is.
Well, the one thing that's a positive is short interest is at an all-time high.
Yeah.
And at some point when people decide to start covering their shorts, that'll provide support to the market. Then a couple weeks later, after all that covering has gone undone, then that's where the risk is, because then you'll have even more stocks that aren't heavily shorted. And if people then decide to sell, then it becomes a bigger problem. So I'm looking at a chart of SPY right now, and we're holding the September low. So is that's kind of good, right?
Yeah, I want to see us go below that, frankly. But, you know, this is not a horrible situation. We're within the realms of where we would have for a normal correction. Again, we have to see how this shapes up. But it's not a complete fiasco yet, and we may see. Now, there is one thing that is very bad, Jeff. We haven't mentioned this, and I want to be sure I mentioned it, is some of the money center bank stocks, like Bank of America and Citigroup, are way off. And those stocks have been very, very strong. Financials have been very strong. When I look at American Express, it's way down. Visa and MasterCard are not, which implies problems with international, since Visa and MasterCard basically aren't travel-oriented and American Express is. So, you know, there are, you know, this is not all rosy. Okay, look at Delta Airlines down 9%. This is not all rosy, but I would just mention one more time, and then, Jeff, any more comments from you, and then we'll go straight to questions because I want to make sure people get a chance to ask some things if they want to. But, you know, this is not out of the realm of possibility. You very often have a bad emotional day in these corrections. And again, you know, if you're in something like, let's say, I'm going to bring up one, Snowflake, that's down from, you know, roughly, let's see, from the peak at 194 to 142, you're feeling a lot worse than if you're in Colgate.
Yeah, Colgate's up today.
Yeah, pisses me off. I tried to buy it yesterday and I missed.
Yeah. I get your idea I mean, it definitely is.
Everyone, Jeff, is in at least some of these big tech names. It does feel worse. And again, we pointed out in the midweek, I'm going to look at it again, you know, SPLV, low volatility, made an all-time high a few days ago.
Yep. Yep. Right. Well, there's a lot of stupid stuff being said by a lot of people as well.
Yeah.
So I would propose we open up for let me tell you what I was going to say. I was going to say we open up to having people submit quotes of the stupidest things they've heard, and then we might take four or five of those and publish those next week. So I'll start it off with my stupidest quote I've heard, which I put in our morning note that Jack and I put out. Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, said, quote unquote, the drop today is about tech woes, not about tariffs.
Right. Yeah.
Really?
And there's one other thing I need to mention to everybody. On the call, I forgot to put this in the weekly last week, my informal poll of stick shift drivers versus everyone else on the call, I asked everyone to send me a note, 5. And we regularly have over 100 on the call. So
wow.
It's a dying art. Jeff, anything else from you? Otherwise, we'll put Bob on for just a minute,
nope,
and then I think
nope.
We open right to questions.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I'm on. Bob here. I would just comment that corrections in long-term bull markets, which I believe we are still in, have a strong tendency to bottom in the 8 to 12% range of the S&P or Dow versus its all-time high. Right now, we're about 10.8% off that high. So we are in that range where corrections tend have a significant tendency to stop. Also, corrections need to be of sufficient duration. This one has been 14 days since the prior low. So that is adequate if the market were to turn up here without going below 12% off the all-time high. If it does go worse than 12%, then there tends to be an air pocket between there and down about 18 to 22%. So, that's the situation that I would call to your attention. One other thing that I just heard, I don't know, maybe you can correct me, but I heard that semiconductors are not subject to the tariffs. So that's one reason why NVIDIA wouldn't be down more, because their semiconductors are made by Taiwan Semiconductor and apparently are not subject to the tariffs. At least not at this point. Okay, so that's pretty much all I wanted to say here.
Great, Bob. Thank you very much. Let's open right away to questions.
Hey, Fred. Real quick,
yeah.
just to follow up on Bob's stuff. I have a spreadsheet and I just updated it for right now. So in terms of the pullbacks, corrections, it's still interesting. The Dow has yet to enter a corrections phase where it is right now at 4,709. It's only down 9.33%. So here are the drops right now on an absolute percentage basis. And Bob, you might comment because I'm giving up to the second. S&P is down 10.13. NASDAQ 100 is down 13.30. NASDAQ Composite's down 14.25. The Russell's down 18.36. And the mid-cap's down 15.69. So those are up-to-the-minute drops in the various indexes.
Got it.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add. That's good perspective, though.
Okay, cool. I just want to make sure everyone kind of knew that. I mean, what do you think about the fact the Dow has yet to enter correction phase? And what's interesting, Bob, is the correction that we had in both 24 and 23 after we finished the bear market of 22, the Dow in each of those periods never made it to full correction status. It didn't do it.
Well, they are considered to be less a little less risky than the S&P 500, which is considered to be less risky than the NASDAQ composite. And so you're seeing the scale that you just read, just rounding them off, down 9, down 13, down 14, down 18 on the four composite indices that you just read. So that's kind of not unexpected.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, if you have divergences, as we all know, they tend to confirm a bottom. So if we were to turn up right here and the Dow didn't go into correction territory, that would be, I think, a technically bullish phenomenon.
Yeah, this reminds me in that respect, Bob, of 1995 when you and I were working together when the Robinson Humphrey Universe went down something like 23% and the Dow didn't even make it to down 10%. We got to like 9.7. And the RH Universe at the time was small to mid-cap, riskier stocks. Well, guys, let's open to questions, and we can all, Jeff and I will chime in as needed, and if Bob stays on, he can chime in as well. So let's have some questions.
Brett?
Yes, Patrick.
Oh, hey. Sorry, guys. I actually had to get off the call for 5 minutes because I had a client call me, and I got back on. Hey, he mentioned something pretty interesting. He said that he thinks that the whole world is going to line up against Trump and hold their guard, up and hold their line and just stay against them the entire time. What are your optics on this getting resolved? And if it does, what's the time frame?
Well, Patrick, I'll answer that first, and then if there's any chiming in from Jeff and Bob, we should feel free. But I think the biggest thing to mention is the countries that seem to have the most severe tariffs also are the ones where we have the biggest trade deficits. And obviously, just to be elementary, what causes a trade deficit is they are sending more goods to us than we are sending to them. Okay? So the question really in terms of pain is, will those countries feel more pain than we do? Okay? If they feel more pain locally than we do, there's a good chance that these things are going to resolve themselves more quickly than people would think. Now, there's another thing, though, that is important to realize that will mitigate the effects of that. And I'm going to use the example of Airbus. Airbus is a European country, company rather, and Airbus is subsidized by the governments over there, whereas Boeing is not. Those governments may very well say, we'll just increase our subsidies. We don't care. We think we can break Trump and break the United States tariffs if we can keep this up for a year or two. And again, one of the things about working with the government is you've got awfully, your funds are relatively unlimited versus a private company. You look at something like Turkish Airlines, that is government subsidized. In other words, there's more to this than just they have tariffs against us. It's a question of fairness, I think, in the minds of the administration. So that to me is the one sort of wild ass variable that you have here, and how that resolves. But by and large, I would think those countries, and we've seen some numbers from Bob and others that show that Canada's trade deficit, they export 34% of their GDP to us versus us exporting 2% to them. It's going to be more pain for them. A lot of these countries are probably going to try to negotiate this away. That is my guess. And again, you have the example of Israel that dropped all their tariffs before this happened on U.S. goods. They're now none. They announced it. Now, admittedly, if you read between the lines there and find out what was going on, they only had tariffs on 5% of our goods. Okay? So it wasn't a big deal versus something like Airbus, say. But Patrick, my guess is this is going to resolve itself a good bit more quickly than right now people are thinking and acting.
What's your time frame, your gut?
I would say probably no more than through the summer. In other words, if the cycle that I've been looking at suggests that this is not going to resolve, you know, that we were going to be up into summer and instead we're down into summer, that would be about my maximum. Is this goes, this pretty much ends in July and August. And Patrick, again, a lot of this move today is probably discounting longer time versus of problems versus shorter time.
So, do you think this could last for 3 months? This downturn?
2-3 months, and not with every country.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the markets go, do you think they'll...
Could we be straight down for 3 months is the question, right? Just straight down.
At these levels or flat?
Yeah, I think that's possible. Right now, the technicals don't really support that. And again, realize, Patrick, sentiment is a condition indicator, but intermediate sentiment levels, by the way we do things, are pretty much where we were at the bottom in 2022 in October after a basically 9-month choppy decline. So that would argue for, if anything spooks this market, we're going to see a rally. And I think we're probably, right now from a technical perspective, Patrick, I'm still looking for a rally to start from in here into next week.
Okay, so these people that call all of us, that they, all the analysts said that we should rally, after this, this is just a digestion of that process.
I think it is, Patrick, and the other thing too is you look at, and again, I know Patrick is in California, so he probably has a little more tech exposure than some of the guys do in Mobile, Alabama. So this feels worse if you're more in those stocks. But objectively, if you look at something like Visa, for example, it's down today, but the low was, 2 weeks ago.
Sure.
Right? You're seeing, and again, let's try to look at it this way, Patrick. This might be something to look at. RSP is down at the low of the move. The spider is way below it, right? It's a question of capitalization, too, right? And a lot of these big cap tech names are in the S&P cap weighted, and they're in the equally weighted, but they don't have the same effect.
Got it.
Oh, sure, yeah. And Patrick, we can talk later, but what I would be telling clients is two things. I mean, let's be practical here. It is almost never a good idea to sell on the big down day, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen that. A lot of the time, on days like this, the market actually bottoms by 11 o'clock in the morning Eastern, and we're still 20 minutes away. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I would be selling much of anything. Now, obviously, guys, we have to use risk management. If we have stocks that are going through risk management points, we have to sell at least some of them and raise some cash. But the average stock, I mean, the only thing that worries me here is Bank of America, Citibank. Some of these stocks are making new lows. That does not bode well. But other than that, you're still seeing stocks that should be doing worse holding on.
Okay. Yeah, Wayfair is really, really getting hit hard.
Yeah, and again, do they have a lot of stuff from China, Patrick?
You know, they're dealing with, you know, the internet, so.
Yeah,
you know,
so there's a lot of imported stuff that they sell.
Oh.
So, yeah, but it's individual, again, some are up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Fred, you're the best. Sorry to take so long on that.
No, that's okay,
well,
Patrick. We'll talk. It's good to have you on the call.
Bob here. I'd like to reinforce what Fred said about the few months outlook. I agree with that. I don't have an opinion on the few days and usually don't. So, yeah, that's clearly Fred's territory. I think the question that you asked, Patrick, about the whole world, if they line up against the U.S., is that going to be the deciding factor of how this unfolds? I think the answer to that is no. I think this is a politics question of what the populace in these countries is going to tolerate in terms of recession. We would not tend to have a recession when countries like Mexico and Canada would have a few percent recession. We would have a few tenths of a percent decline or lower than otherwise GDP, but they would have recessionary numbers, single digit. And that's really the deciding factor, in my opinion. These countries are not going to be able to tolerate this tariff war very long. I think they're going to have to cave, and they're going to have to make some sort of deal with Trump. He's a deal maker. And so we'll see how it unfolds.
And Bob, I have a question for Bob. This is one I asked someone yesterday, but I've got the advantage of having Bob and Bob being old.
Oh, my gosh.
Guilty as charged.
That is funny. That is funny.
Well, Bob is old.
I thought that was your friend, Fred.
Bob, have you ever seen a U.S. recession immediately after copper has made an all-time high?
Oh, I don't know, Fred. You're the crystal ball on that.
Dr. Copper.
I published the ETFs in the weekly last week. Jack, make a note. I was scrolling through some of the charts in stockcharts.com, and thanks to Jack, we have an excellent chart of nearby copper futures. We will feature that in the weekly this week in the chart of interest section. I can't recall Dr. Copper ever making new highs and then having a recession that started in the next few weeks. Anything can happen, but that would be unusual. So, anyway, let's get to more questions.
Hey, Fred, just real quickly on a couple things very quickly. So, on Patrick, on Wayfair, it's down today because of RH. So, look at RH. And also Williams-Sonoma, WSM, is down because of RH as well. So RH had really bad earnings. They lost 34 cents against estimates. So that's just so you both of you know that it has nothing to do with tariffs and stuff. It has to do with the fact that RH had its worst numbers in 9 years.
Copy.
Ah, okay, thank you, Jeff.
You're a rock star. Thanks, man.
Other thing real quickly is, Fred, I had the luck yesterday of catching the CEO of Freeport MacMoran on CNBC in an interview. And you're correct about copper. There were rumors last week that copper was going to get hit with tariffs. In other words, copper that's coming into this country would be getting hit. That was left out of the tariff stuff. Yet, FCX was doing really well. As a matter of fact, I recommended it in our option service for May, and I'm looking kind of stupid right now, but it's going to come back because there was it didn't happen. So they're not going to put the tariff on copper. And the other thing is that FCX produces 70% of the copper that's produced in the United States, and the bulk of it comes there. And, Fred, the other thing is that the CEO said that copper tracks inflation tracks GDP growth really closely. So if copper is doing well, which it is, that bodes positively, not negatively, for GDP growth, just so you know. I'm writing that one up, Fred, as well, on what you said, but it was definitely a very positive interview on copper. And so what do you think about FCX where it is right now? I think it's just gotten overdone to the downside here.
I think it's a little bit overdone. Now, we have in our list of stocks in the sector review SCCO, which is Southern Copper. And I think that in some respects, Southern Copper is a better chart, but certainly I think that these copper stocks are a bit overdone here.
Okay. So, Fred, last question for you is, you obviously have a master's degree in international relations, correct?
Correct. Latin American
okay.
Studies in international
yep,
relations.
Yep. But so you understand the trade stuff really well. So here comes my question for you. A lot of these goods that are coming back into this country, because after the Cold War ended and we took down the wall, we went from basically a multipolar-driven world, i.e. multiple leaders, to a unipolar world, i.e. only us, and now we're going back to a multipolar world again. A lot of the goods that are coming into this country are really not the goods of China. They're actually really the goods of the U.S., because we put up manufacturing over there. So it's kind of being thought about ass backwards. It's like it's our goods that are coming back into here. And at some point, do you not think that all the U.S. corporations are going to get in Trump's face about this?
Yeah, there's probably going to be some of that. And the other thing, though, is we've already seen companies like Apple suggest that they're going to build more facilities here. And I think that's something that Trump wants, and I think that that's something that, frankly, a lot of blue-collar manufacturing-type guys would not mind, and that was part of his constituency. So, there's going to be some issues with that, but I don't think it's going to be as horrible as it could be. But, yeah, there's going to be pressure on him to drop this. There's no question about it, and we'll just have to see how that shapes up.
Hey, Fred, to your point on Apple, so there was an article in Bloomberg yesterday. The number, when you add it all up, what all the companies have said they're going to be doing, it's $1.6 trillion now. Bloomberg also kind of hinted that that's more what companies are saying they're going to do. It's not necessarily what they're going to do. But that was a really kind of good article to read. It shows you how much he has been able to get commitments to building. That's a very big number, $1.6 trillion. Okay, I'm done.
Very good. Okay, let's open for more questions.
Fred?
Yes, Yogesh.
It's a question. The gold is still behaving well in this market. On the other side, the euro, so the dollar is much weaker. And so, and the third thing, as you were discussing about the copper, it seems to me the three of you are quite overall bullish on the market, and the copper is indication. Should not the dollar also get stronger, and the gold also should get weaker?
You know, I think so, Yogesh. This is something I want to just mention here. And what I want to do is take a look at – I need to look at another different chart here from a different charting package. But let's see. The dollar has been a big, giant trading range for a while,
right,
from basically 100 to 110, and it's still in that range, and the euro is the same sort of thing. It's also a range. We've been looking for FXY, the yen, to get to 65. It has not yet done so. So we could see a little bit more on the dollar. I want to mention something on gold, and again, you know, it's an uptrend. You kind of have to be holding gold as long as that's true. But there was some weird stuff in the open interest of the April contract that suggests that we could see something odd happen with physical gold in the next couple of months, and I'd just be prepared for that. But right now, you want to be in gold. Frankly, it hasn't broken yet. It went right down to its support in the 285 area on GLD and has basically held it so far.
So do you think gold's a buy?
Do I think gold's a buy? Probably not. I wouldn't buy it here, but I would certainly hold it here. And again, let me just look. The one thing I have sort of forgotten about and I will look at is...
I was looking at First Solar. It's the one stock that's up in Mer.
Yeah, in your portfolio. Yeah. Yeah. Such are the joys of tech. Yeah, you look at the gold stocks, they're still trading reasonably well. Yeah, this is an area we have to be in. I've been wrong on this. At least I haven't sold it. I mean, I sold mine personally on March 31st. You know, when the April contract went to spot. But, you know, for people holding the stocks and stuff, it's still reasonably appealing.
So the Ray, you are saying that if you own the gold or gold stock, hold it a little longer until you change your mind.
Yeah, and just have some risk management in place and realize if you hear rumblings of some sort of shortage of physical gold because for delivery issues,
right,
that could end up being a real thing and not just a rumor. That's something I've got my nose to the ground on completely right now. Without getting into the real weeds on that, there was a big increase in open interest in the April contract just before it went to spot. Okay. And the only way to create open interest in commodities is new sales, new short sales. So somebody is basically trying to force people to buy their gold. That open interest went away right afterwards. It's going to be very interesting to see. We may see something unique in the metals here in the next couple of months. But for now, I'm not the only person that knows commodities that saw that. I'm sure there are other people looking at it, and they're trading up and holding on pretty well. I think you have to go with that. It went right down. Actually, my support level for GLD today was 282.51. The low is 282.45. It's almost near the highs of the day. You have to stay with it.
Okay. Second question, Fred, that it's less than that we are all optimistic, especially some of us are very optimistic about the market. And let's say that our view may not be as the bullish may not work out. What is the downside? Is going to S&P or Dow or NASDAQ?
You know, it's hard to say, Yogesh. I mean, if we have a real bear and things are as lousy as they say, 500 on the S&P is easy. 420 on the Qs is easy.
Okay.
And really easy. I mean, and 400 on the Qs is very doable.
That's indeed different. I mean, just on a big picture, if you look at the news that is coming out, right? So the China and Iran and North Korea and Russia, and they're all coming together. The group wise, because many times what happens is the closest friend are going to worry about the joining hands of the people who are not very favorable. So a lot of things can happen, and another concern that I have, the mob was saying that, hey, if things pursue further, the other people will have to start agreeing with us, maybe. But if when they all start coming together and unite against America, there may be a little more price that we may have to pay. So just,
yeah,
I might take it. Yeah.
I think it's too early to forecast that. And again, that's right. Political analysis that I'm not particularly good at. But yeah, there's definitely an attempt at some sort of world realignment. We'll have to see how that goes.
Right.
But to give you just, again, one of those things that was interesting to me, I spoke to a client of mine who is most emphatically, he's an Indian client, by the way, not in favor of President Trump at all. Right. And he said, my God, he's absolutely right about these tariffs. Harley Davidson has 100% tariff in India. It's just to protect their three motorcycle manufacturers that are no good. I just wish he wouldn't announce things the way he announces them.
That is the main thing, is how you approach it. But it's too early for us, any one of us, to know and respond to it. On the one hand, I'm optimistic. Other hand, because the valuation in the U.S. market is not cheap, and that is what my concern was, nothing
and
else.
And again, Yogesh, one of the points that we have to make here is if stuff is hitting stop-loss points on intermediate investments, you don't have to sell all of it, but you certainly could sell some of it, right?
Right.
To use risk management and not just assume everything's going to be rosy, because sometimes things do go wrong. And one of the problems I've always had with tech names is that I don't understand them well enough to know if a new technology is going to supersede another technology or not. We'll just have to see. But again, a lot of these stocks right now, with the indexes making new lows, boom. Yeah, so let's move on to some more
questions
and see if we
can
do anything to help people here. Other questions?
Hey, Fred, can I step in on, get some thoughts and questions on sentiment and volatility?
Yeah.
And I know vol and sentiment are not your favorites, but a lot of the sentiment, bulls, bears, AAII, they were as negative as I've ever seen in the recent snafus, and volatility, usually one would expect VIX to be well north of 30 today. Yesterday was the peak in not knowing what's going to happen with the tariffs. So obviously you can have some follow-ons, but as you said, with the fact that they have a lot more pain than we do, one would kind of think that the volatility of lack of following through may be sort of a sign that might turn around more quickly than prior thoughts. But any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, we have to see. But normally in the absence of news, you get a drop like this, you get some sideways behavior as the drop is digested, and then we see what the market's made of from that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
The trick, I think, is to look at individual stocks, and we've given a number of examples where they're not making new lows, and those are names you want to look at. We've talked about XLP, as being a strong sector for this, and when we put out our little trading list a little while ago, P&G was on it. The trick now is to watch your individual stocks. And, do you have any questions on individual names here, Scott?
Not at this time, but thank you.
Yeah. And we'll have those certainly in a while, I'm sure, and people can email those in. I'm around. Let's see if there's any individual stock questions and things like that that we can do for people.
Hey, Fred, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. What do you think of these international markets holding up? Like EWW and KWeb is hardly down, and SEZ. Is that kind of telling you that this may be negotiated out sooner rather than later, or what?
Yeah. And again, there's been some valuation issues in the U.S. market that these don't have, and we should have some exposure there. I think, oddly enough, we'll have to see. But my forecast has been that the United States is actually going to do better by the end of the year than Germany. We'll have to see. But certainly, you know, it's not affecting the international stuff as much.
Yeah, I mean, Trump 1.0, when he had the tariffs back in 2018, we had about a 12%, you know, drop around the same time period here, this March, April.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know Jeff's numbers, but I'm getting about 11.7, 11.8 on the S&P right now or so on there. So I think we're right in the ballpark. Okay, what about IWM here? Obviously, it's getting hit the hardest down here in the 180. Do you take a flyer on that one or stay away? Or
you know, whatever? I am going to wait on that simply because it is weak. You want to buy it. A good friend of mine, when I was learning this business, put it to me this way. He said, when stuff is on sale, you want to buy the best stuff, not the worst. Right? And I think you have to look at some of the relative performance of some of these things. And the Russell just isn't doing it. Now, maybe if interest rates, if we can see TLT really get above 92.50, which has been a hell of a barrier, and head for that 95, 97 area that we've been looking for, that will pick up the Russell a little bit.
So what would you be buying in here then, like relative strength here, if we got a little bit of cash that we need to put to work?
You know, I would be looking, you know, if you want more tech-oriented stuff, to me, Tesla is, is a steal, but it's not. U.S. Steel is a steal. You know, I would certainly look at Tesla. It's nowhere near the lows. I think the trick is to go for the premier companies. I've got an order in to buy NVIDIA at 100 and change. We'll see if I can get it. I've had that order in for a month, good till canceled, and I've had no luck. I may get it today. You look at a stock like Palantir, it's well off its lows. You look at a stock like Caterpillar, you know, it's at least breaking down. Something like that on a weekly basis is near support. And again, some of the, you know, foreign stuff, I would love, let's have a look at this one. MUFG is a perfect chart coming right down to the uptrend, and it's down 3 points from the highs. That's something I would buy. That bank is not going away, and I think it's down on this news, so something like that I would do.
How about something like a Nike taking out the COVID lows, you know, so bad it's good here, or is that just like a falling
knife? You know, I have consistently been wrong on this stock. The pattern on Nike is such that I wouldn't buy it till it turns around. You could have one more down day on this. And I've never liked this company.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, that's one I wouldn't really want to do. Yeah, some of the staples, I mean, Jeff was right. Philip Morris looks phenomenal.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think Nike, Wayfair, VF Corp, a few of these are all doing manufacturing in Vietnam. You know,
yeah.
Which ironically, they left China to go to Vietnam. Vietnam
right.
Got hit with the 46%, you know, tariffs. So I don't know. I think these numbers are so absurd on these tariffs. They're going to have to get negotiated.
Yeah. You know? And bear in mind, we're seeing good action in dividend stocks and more value-oriented stuff. The market's going to rotate to some of those sooner or later. I'd be looking at some of those names, one-rated stocks from your firm, and see if there isn't something we can use to diversify some of these holdings. What's happened after a big tech move like we've had is, whether you want it or not, your portfolios get overweighted in it.
Yeah. So Amgen and Gilead still look good, though, on the biotech?
Amgen looks fine. You know, I, you know, in some respects wish that I'd put Gilead on my list of favorite sector stocks instead of Amgen, but Amgen still looks fine, and I would buy it. AbbVie, I think, looks fine. You know, some of these names look quite appealing and are trading decently in this environment.
So are you seeing some divergence bottom signs? I know we get those kind of the retest, divergence.
I need
stuff.
To see closing numbers to see that. But, yeah, it looks like some of that is happening. And, again, we're probably, you know, given the news and the way this thing is trading, it's probably not going to turn around and go right back up tomorrow. I want to see what the weekly numbers look like. But, you know, the question is this going to be a kickoff move to the downside where we go a whole bunch lower, or whether this is going to be part of a divergence bottom pattern? And I think it could be.
Yeah, we have those, what, September lows around 539 on SPY, or like right
yeah.
kind of in vicinity.
Yeah.
There. We'll
and people, there's no doubt from the put call numbers that we've seen, there's no doubt that people have been, even though the sentiment polls are very bullish, what people have actually been doing with their money is not. And maybe we can finally see some just horrible, ghastly put call numbers today. One would hope.
What do we need? What do we need to see? Those 1.2 or so, or what are we looking
at? 1.2, you know, over 1.1. We've been at 95 again, which is higher than it was. But we're going to be publishing the monthly this week, and I'll be able to evaluate those numbers then when I see my charts.
All right, sounds good. All right, appreciate it, buddy. Thanks.
Got it. Other questions? Other questions?
Hey, Fred.
Yes, sir.
Hey, this is John Kokolas from Williamsburg.
Hey, John.
How are you?
Good.
Hey, I was just curious. I know we spoke last week, and Meta seems to be right at that spot of the neckline. Is this something that seems like it's holding on here to you?
So far, but this is one of those ones that could do badly. And again, it's way, way up.
Yeah.
You know, in 2022,
yeah,
the stock was below 125, right?
Yeah.
Could I see this get to 375 to 350? Absolutely.
So if you have a gain in this, would you take your profit here, or would you wait a day or two?
I'd take some of it off here and put that money somewhere else.
Okay.
Yeah, the things that have really big gains, if the clients are concerned about them, or you own them, you're concerned about them, you know, and we had an interesting discussion, John, with somebody on the with actually former Robinson Humphrey bank analyst Chris Marinac about the virtues of passive investing versus active investing. And Chris made a point which I sort of knew, but also was a really profound point, and that is the best active managers know how to sell.
Yep.
Right? Passive investors, you don't need to sell, supposedly. Right? But an active investor, you have to know how to sell.
Right. That's a big struggle of mine.
Yeah. No, it is. It's hard. It hasn't been a market for selling and switching for a bit if you're in the Mag 7 or some of these other names. But, yeah, it's actually something that is quite important.
What about Apple here? Apple seems like it's on support as well here.
It's near right, support. Or? I could see Apple go to 175 easily here and not be broken. And it's still a good long-term chart.
I guess if you wanted to protect yourself there, you would maybe take a little off the table here and maybe re-enter around 175,
I would certainly try that, or re-enter in a completely different stock in a completely different sector.
Okay.
If you've got people that are nervous, that's one of the things that you can certainly do. And we should be probably more diversified by sector anyway.
Yeah. And do you think Trane is hanging on here pretty good, even though it's down big today?
Yeah, Trane is trading very nicely. Compared to some of the other AI stocks, it's trading very well.
And what about Eaton Corporation?
What's the symbol?
ETN. Word Tom Nancy.
Yeah, got it. Let me see again. I'm looking at intermediate charts on this. That below 250, I would sell some of it anyway. It looks then like 220 to 200. Otherwise,
sir.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, Fred.
Got it, John. Other questions?
Hey, Fred. This is
Jeff.
Hey, Coherent, C-O-H-R. It blew through 61.
Oh, Fred, I made
it. Should have been double.
C-O-H-R.
Yeah, I know it's not a favorite of yours. Down almost 20% today. I mean, this is ridiculous. Do you, how much lower before I buy more?
Let's try for 48 if it can get there. It may not. It may stop at 50. But given this environment, I'd like to see some, you'll probably see some potential overshoots. I don't know anything about this company, but it is tech, according to my screen, and these can get hit a little bit worse.
It's a Blackwell supplier, and Blackwell's not going anywhere, and it's potentially could just explode, you know, with one news from any video. But. Okay, thank you.
Good. We'll talk soon, Jeff.
Fred, good to see you.
Hey, Yogesh.
Just a question you mentioned about the Gilead. So thank you for making that comment on the Gilead. So we should hold them, right? Correct?
Oh,
Gilead
God,
and
yeah.
Many of the pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, these are trading well. And again, you know, premier companies, right? In corrections, you look for the best company you can find. Right. And a good way of illustrating that, I would buy NVIDIA at a heartbeat. I would not buy AMD if you gave me the money to do it.
Right. No. I mean, the you and all the three people on your team are very focused on what to buy and what not to buy. And I cannot say enough to thank you guys. So thank you. A second thing, the financials. As you mentioned about the copper is going up and economy is still okay. Finances should be okay, right? So there's no need to worry about recession or slowing down in economy or something.
Right now, I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I have to admit, I'm a little bit surprised by the banks, but at the same time, Yogesh, it's not across the financials. You look at Visa. Visa opened down at 333. It's at 342 and trading near the lows of yesterday. That stock's trading well, right? AXP is not, but I think they're trying to say that we're going to have some issues with travel or whatever. But even AXP is not terrible relative to the lows. This is just a double bottom. It didn't make a double bottom in the last pullback before it started rallying a few days ago.
Thank you, sir.
Got it. Other questions?
Hi, this is Chris from Ohio.
Chris.
Okay, so this question is Morgan Stanley, and we've been talking about financials. A bunch of us, including myself, just got issued a ton of stock 2 days ago at about 117. And would you sell it and diversify at this point? Would you wait for a rebound? What are you kind of seeing as far as the trading pattern of that stock?
Morgan Stanley. I basically still like the stock. Now, again, Chris, obviously every one of us on the call that are getting stock as part of their compensation needs to look at their overall holding and amount of diversification. And to me, you don't want more than 20% in your own company's stock.
Okay.
Right? So if you're over 20% on general, no matter where the stock is, you want to be selling it and putting the money into something else.
Okay. Second question. Thank you. Second question is, you discussed this potential for a rally in the next week and a half, if you will, or less. What would you say in your mind is the I'm just kind of thinking, just trying to get in your head. What do you think the probability of that happening is compared to, you know, continued downtrend or something like that? What are you thinking from your perspective? You know, is it a high probability, low probability?
I think it's a high probability, but honestly, right now, it wouldn't surprise me. You know, the real question, let's put yourself in the head of a money manager going into the weekend, knowing mm-hmm. people are going to start looking at their accounts over the weekend mm-hmm. when they see the news. We're probably not going to have a big up day on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, after Friday, as the news suggests, that's when we should start to see some rally possibilities here. I don't think it's going to be tomorrow.
Okay, excellent. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Hey, Fred.
Yes, sir.
Cam.
Cam.
To introduce myself to everybody, Fred and I used to work at Merrill, and Fred and I are starting to collaborate on some things. My focus tend to be more quant and factor and sectors. A couple of observations on gold and copper. I'm sure you've seen the stories about the imports of physical gold from London into New York in anticipation of tariffs. And the same story, as Fred mentioned, is happening with coppers. So there's funny things going on in the physical market. And when I look at the more, and when people look at the copper gold ratio, it's been kind of rising. But if I look at the more diversified base metals to gold ratio, it's been flat to down. So from a cyclical point of view, I'm not as keen on the cyclical picture that way.
Right.
And the other thing is, and I've heard some comments on the call as to whether these tariffs are going to get negotiated away. For people who don't know, I'm in Canada. And what I've heard second and third hand from people who were in meetings with Melanie Jolie, who's our foreign minister, and she was in a meeting with some institutional investors, and she said, you know, I talk to Marco Rubio regularly, almost on a daily basis, and she says we've been talking to the Americans and asking them, what is it that you want so we can negotiate some of these issues? And Rubio and his team really couldn't tell us. They couldn't tell us. So this becomes an issue in trade negotiations of the other side doesn't know what Trump wants. So I'm not sure how quickly this gets negotiated away. If his objective is to get rid of the trade deficits. And the evolution that I see is right now we're seeing a lot of strategists and economists take down their numbers today. And that's, you're going to see a lot of the soft data, the survey data come down. The big question in my mind is what happens to the hard data? And that's going to take a few months to show up. You're going to see top-down sentiment from strategists come down and top-down estimates come down. The bottom-up estimates aren't going to come down from company analysts because they can't revise the numbers down until they talk to their companies and get some clarity on how bad things are. So they're not going to move their estimates until that happens. So you've got this tension between soft data and hard data, and how that plays out in the coming months is the key of whether this is just a plain vanilla correction or an honest to goodness bear market that's induced by a recession. And that's something that we won't know. And we just have to watch the market action in the coming months to be able to tell.
Yeah, Cam, if you see any information on that hard data, and that is a point, Cam's point, that people aren't really certain about what the administration wants, is actually an interesting point that I read one small thing on. But again, Cam has the benefit of being in Canada and not U.S.-centric. So that's very helpful, Cam. Thank you for that. Let's see if we've got some other questions.
Fred, it's Paul.
Paul.
Hey, I've been watching the put call since you pointed out this issue some time ago. And the CBOE.com is the only place I've been able to find intraday data on that. It posts equity put call, index put call, and then total put call.
I use total.
Oh, you use total. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So the one weird thing is that over the past 3 weeks since I've been watching this, the equity put call number has always been smaller than the total. Today at 7:30 Pacific, 9:30 Central, I believe, if I'm doing that correctly.
10:30. Oh, yeah, 9:30 Central, yeah.
Yep. I think we saw the equity put call come in at 1.33, which is a big spike in comparison to anything we've seen yet in the equity. I thought you were watching equity. But the total came in at 1.24 at 7:30. It's the latest number at 10 a.m. Central was 119. Is that a source that you use, number one, CBOE.com, or do you look at this stuff at the end of the day?
I use CBOE.com. I look at the total put call ratio, and I use the end of day data. The final print. And that comes out late at night. That'll be 8:30 your time in the Pacific. But April 2nd, for example, was a 0.95. Right? Still not over 120. Now, again, we'll have to see. Right now, it looks like you're going to get a number above 110 today. Okay, from those numbers. We'll have to see how the market acts and if we see some more call buying at the end of the day. The reason I don't use the equity put call is a lot of that number comes from people writing options on their stocks,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's not necessarily a bearish market bet. It's I've got high premium. I want to write calls on my stock.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Whereas the total put call gives you your best look, I think, at a market bet followed by a, you know, some of the equity stuff is in there, obviously.
Thank you for that. That helps me know how to look at it for what you're doing. Thank you.
Yeah, and Paul, go back. Everyone, well, you'll see it in the monthly, and I will point this out in detail and maybe even publish the put call chart in the weekly as well, since people are interested in this. But what you see at a major bottom, or you know, a good bottom, even in a bull market correction, is all of a sudden the total put call ratio gets a lot more puts and it spikes up. You can see that if you've got an old monthly report of mine lying around. We are nowhere near that spike right now. That's the one of the big that's been the only problem with this market for me, but it is definitely there.
Does it make sense that these things get to those levels in the first several days after the real bottom, because people are thinking, oh, this is a bounce and we're going to make new lows, then they add there? Yes.
That can happen. And of course, you know, again, I don't want to be funny about this, okay? But one of the problems we're going to have with the data when we publish the put call over the weekend, when we do the monthly, is we're only going to have today and Friday a panic potential reading. And honestly, the main number that spikes for me is a 5 to 7 day moving average of that data, right? So we're not going to have 5 days when I publish, right? And so actually what I may do, and Jack, you can make a note of this, is maybe in the midweek when we've got a couple more days worth, publish the put call chart again. So, but yeah, it is frustrating. You know, it's been really interesting to see from a standpoint of sentiment. I'm not going to go into this a lot because people may have some more questions, that every one thing you read in the newspaper and everything people are talking about is negative, and the intermediate sentiment indicators are negative, you know, really negative, more bears than bulls a couple of times, and the put call has been, right, but that's the fact, that's the way it's been.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unusual.
Yep. Thank you.
But again, everybody remember the technician's disease. You got the technician's disease is I'm not going to do anything until I get everything I want. Right? And sometimes you just don't have every indicator line up. And if I've made a mistake on this move here, it's that I've been looking at that indicator and saying, man, that's really lousy, but it's only one indicator. The rest of the stuff looks okay. So take that for what it's worth. Paul, let's see if there's some more questions from people. I've got another 15 minutes if people want me for on the call for 15 more minutes. I hear someone.
Brad, I'll throw a couple stocks at you if that's okay.
Sure.
I'm going to do the either or, please. CM, this is actually unlike me. This is for a short-term portfolio. CMG or TTWO?
CMG. You know, TTWO looks a little bit better and is trading a little bit better short-term. My only concern is it's in tech and the others in restaurants, but it basically does look a little bit better.
Okay. AFL or RJF?
Apple, Fred, Larry?
Yep.
Aflac?
Yep.
Or what's the other one?
Raymond James, RJF.
RJF. I'd have to say AFL.
Okay. BK or SYF?
BK or SYF is in Fred?
Yep.
BK.
Okay. ICE or AME?
ICE. AME. I'm having lunch about 5 minutes away from the ICE home office. ICE looks better.
Okay. NTRS or FDX?
You know, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say FDX.
Okay. And the last one, QCOM or CRM?
With the caveat being that I've lost money every single time I've tried to trade Qualcomm, every single time, for years, I would have to say CRM.
Oh, okay. I almost had a perfect score. I predicted right all but the last one. So
okay.
Thanks. That's You're all welcome. I had. Thanks.
Got it. Let's see if there's any others. Other questions? Very well. We'll say going once, going twice. Very well. This will end the Fred Report Technical Market Call for April 3rd, 2025. We look forward to talking to everyone next week, and we should have a monthly out and also a good weekly report out over the weekend.